Welcome to the Rambling Charity Experience podcast, the show where you gain the knowledge and skills to be safe on your charity hikes. Learn everything you need from kit, health and safety, nutrition, and the skills you need to fundraise for your chosen charity. In this episode, we focus on the basic kit that is needed to survive in the mountains. Now interviewing Martin Higgins from Chimp Tamer, welcome your host, Adam Farrell.
So Martin, you're officially our mountain leader.
Yes.
So what is it exactly that you do that makes you qualified to be a mountain leader?
I lead people in the mountains.
Hey.
Clues in the title.
It does indeed.
So, so there's in the UK we have a series of qualifications. Mountain leader is one of those. Mm-hmm. So I'm a mountain leader, rock climbing instructor and canoe kayak instructor and all sorts of other adventurous things as well.
Ah, cool.
Personal trainer and nutrition coach added onto that for good measure to get all the fitness side tagged in as well. For the purposes of this, yeah, mountain leader. So I'm there to keep people safe in the hills, show them how to do it, make sure they've got the right stuff with them, all the right kit, and generally keep an eye out, make sure nobody gets lost.
That's always important. We don't want to lose people.
No, that's it. I mean, it's keeping the group together, but also keeping the group where it should be.
Yes.
That's, it's quite key.
Yeah, cool.
And, it's Mountain Rescue don't like it when they have to go out and hunt people down that aren't where they're supposed to be. So, we make sure the groups are always in the right place at the right time and gets down in one piece.
Awesome. And how many years have you been doing this?
Oh, lots and lots. Professionally now is about 20 years, roughly.
Wow, plenty of experience.
Yeah, but I've got personal experience going back most of my life, pretty much.
So, just for story purposes,
yeah,
if you had to pick one climb that you've done that has been the most challenging, which one was it? Where did you go? What did you do?
Ooh, challenging climbs. I've been up some tough hills. Some of them have their physical challenge. Mm-hmm. It's a long way up. So I've trekked in the Himalaya, for instance. So that was got the altitude sickness, had hallucinations all night, and that sort of fun stuff.
Enjoyable
at Machu Picchu base camp. Oh yeah, I've never needed drugs for getting hallucinations. that was a cool one actually. I was lying in my tent. It was about -40 degrees, but I felt hot. Mm-hmm. So I didn't even close the tent door. I laid on top of my sleeping bag. Couldn't get in it. I just stared at the side of the mountain opposite across the glacier. It's a mountain called Tha Pa Chuli, Tent Peak. And you see like faces and patterns in the clouds.
Yeah.
I was seeing faces pop out of the formations, like the black rock and the white snow patterns on it. I was seeing faces pop out of that. Roughly every 5 or 6 seconds, a different famous face in black and white on the side of the mountain just sort of popped out of it. And that was all night. I was staring at the mountain, motionless, all night. And every 5 or 6 seconds, a different famous face. Must have gone through like my entire back catalogue of famous faces in that one night. Never repeated one.
That's mad.
Yeah.
That's absolute nuts.
Yeah, I thought so.
Yeah, just a little bit.
I thought, also, this
the
is
the side of a mountain.
Yeah, this is quite cool, yeah.
So, obviously, you've come in with us, we're doing the National Three Peaks Challenge,
yep,
and you're going to lead us up through there. So a lot of the things that our team are going to need and require, we're getting a lot of questions and that from the team, I'm getting a lot of questions from the team,
yep,
in terms of kit and exactly what it is that we are going to need, just as basics, just to get us through the challenge.
Yep.
So have you got, I don't know, anything like a bit of a kit list and things that we can go through? Or
yeah, so kit lists, they vary depending on where you go and what you're doing. A nice wander around the Peak District in the summer, that's going to be a totally different kit list to heading up Ben Nevis in the middle of winter.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's they're worlds apart in that respect. So for our purposes, we're going to have a sort of a middle ground. We're going in September, we could get poor weather,
mm-hmm,
so we need to be prepared for that, but equally so, we might have fairly pleasant weathering. It could be a shorts and t-shirt type day, to be fair. But as you go up, and we've got 1300 odd meters of ascent in there, so
it's gonna get dramatically colder.
Exactly, yeah. So we need to cover all bases essentially.
So
for that,
in essence then, this is kind of like a good all-rounder kind of thing then that we've got, really, isn't
it? So, very much so.
Yeah, cool.
Personal experience might come into the kit list to an extent as well. As mountain leader, I'll be saying, you know, these are the minimum things you need to have, but then some of that can vary a bit. So, for instance, starting at the bottom, pair of boots. So I'll take a pair of boots like this on that day.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm the leader, I'll be sort of being a bit of a role model in some of the kit I wear.
Yeah.
I wouldn't necessarily always wear this myself, but a pair of boots like that, they're going to keep the water out. These are waterproof boots. And they've got a decent sole on the bottom, which will probably be replaced by the time I get there because it's wearing a bit now.
Yeah.
I've had these a decade or so. Yeah, decent sturdy pair of boots, ankle support, and they'll do the job. They'll grip on the most surfaces and hold me in place. If it was icy, I could strap some crampons onto there, but we shouldn't need that at that time of year.
Yeah.
So if it was November, then we might have to get some like stretch on, just
crampons. I've seen them in millets and places like that. And
yeah, they're like 15, 20 quid, something like that.
They're not expensive, really.
The postman uses them for wandering around the streets in the winter, just to grip on the ice a bit. So so something like that would be suitable. Obviously, you can get like the Nubuck and Canvas type boots as well. They're suitable with the ankle support. But equally so, for a hill like that, I might go up in something like this if I was going up just myself. Going around the Peak District, trails that are fairly smooth and easy to go, something like that would be adequate for a lot of people. It's got the grip on the bottom, but essentially that's a trail running shoe.
Right.
So I might use something like that for those sort of conditions if it wasn't going to be super wet and super boggy.
Yeah.
These are what I've been wearing over Kinder recently because it's so wet, even in the summer, it's still with these ones because it's so wet and horrible. There's an element of personal choice in there. You'd only go for something like this if you're confident with your ankle strength.
Yeah. Right, so beginners-wise and stuff like that, you'd recommend the boots?
Yeah, very much. Yeah, get the ankle support in for beginner use, for sure.
Yeah.
You don't have to spend a fortune. I mean, they're about 110 quid or something like that, but you can get adequate boots for, as I say, for places like the Peak District, which don't have that much tough terrain. You can 30 or 40 quid, you could probably pick a suitable pair up for
happy days.
Yeah, and it comes down a lot to how long they're going to last for, as much as anything else then.
Cool.
So that's boot wise suitable pair of socks to go with that. There's all sorts in the outdoor shops. 10-12 quid will get you a decent enough pair of socks. And again, it's a personal choice thing. If your feet get cold easily, then make sure there's enough space in your boots for a thick pair of socks, and have a thick pair of socks, or have two pairs of socks. Some people like to go for a liner and an outer. Personally, I don't. I just like one single pair of socks and I've done with it. But
yeah,
they tend to be made of wool rather than synthetics because they just suit my feet better. So there's an element of personal preference on that.
Is there any kind of socks that might help with things such as like hot spots or blisters? Can you get any kind of special kind of brand of sock or any kind of material that would reduce the risk? Or
to be fair, there's a lot of socks out there that claim to prevent hot spots and things. Thousand Mile brands, they, you know, you walk that far, the socks will last that well, and they'll protect your feet to an extent. And you know, your other brands like Thorlo and the like, they'll all claim those sort of things, and they've done fancy things with the weave to help with it. In practice, the thing that makes the biggest difference is spending time in the hills and actually walking, and your feet get used to it. As much as anything, if you're walking without your feet sliding around in your shoe, which is as much to do with how you put your foot down as anything else, you're not going to get the blisters.
Cool.
Some people use Vaseline between the toes just to get rid of the friction as they're rubbing together. Some people use Body Glide, which is a water
I've
sport.
Heard of that.
Yeah, water sports people use it. I've used it for getting my wetsuit off of my calves again on a triathlon because it gets stuck. So that just helps it slip a bit. So that can work, similar to the Vaseline. For myself, I've never used them for blister purposes. I lived with big blisters to start with, and my skin toughened up, and I don't get them anymore.
Yeah, I know last time I went walking, I ended up with quite a big blister on the back of my heel. Mm. It weren't particularly nice. Mm. I'd say it were about maybe an inch and a half long, something like that. It was quite painful.
Oh, yeah. I had that. I had a pair of these that didn't quite fit right, because these ones are handmade, Scarpa handmade boots, and they were a slightly different shape. Mm. I was in Morocco heading up Toubkal in the Atlas Mountains, and about that much of my heel came off both sides, and I wasn't in a position to do much about it. It hurt for a bit and then it stopped hurting, and I think that was the nerve damage kicking in. So it stopped hurting, and but then yeah, I had this gaping holes in the back of my feet, which didn't do them much good. But,
live and learn.
Well, exactly, yeah. Yeah, that was a long time ago now. It's often about the boots not quite fitting your feet right. Mm. You know, different people have, you know, they've your heel comes round and cuts back into your Achilles, and some people it's much straighter. So you need a pair of boots that are going to fit that. So you can't, like, pick one brand and it's going to be better than another one. It's finding the foot shape that the different brands have that suits your feet.
And is that kind of like trial and error then to find that out, or is the actual places that you can go where they can kind of point you in the right direction?
Yeah, I'd say the like the decent outdoor stores should have experienced people in the footwear departments to help with that and get the right sort of shape for your feet. Mm. They'll be able to look at your feet and say, yeah, this brand will be a better fit for you, sort of thing. Maybe some of the chain stores, some of them do have non-dribble staff, but you're less likely to get the staff in
so
those sort of stores.
So you're better off going to a proper outdoor shop.
I mean, you'll be more likely paying full price for your boots, but you'll be getting a pair of boots that's going to be right for you then. And some of them do like a bit of a satisfaction guarantee, so you can wear them around the house at home. As long as they haven't been out on the trail, then you can still take them back and swap them out for another pair, that sort of thing. So
cool.
Yeah. Yeah, sometimes it's worth hunting out the experienced stores.
So
that's footwear. I guess sticking with extremities, you need a pair of gloves and a hat. So got a couple of different options here. Obviously you've got normal style gloves with fingers in. These ones claim they're waterproof, but there's no such thing as a waterproof glove. Material can be, but you've got this gaping hole where you put your hand in that water still goes in. So especially when your hand's hanging down that way, which is the way water's going to go. Not really such a thing as waterproof gloves, but you can have glove-shaped gloves, or you can have mitts. So these would be my go-to option for cold weather, because they're made of wool, and whilst that's not waterproof, wool retains heat when it's wet. So a pair of these, I've never yet had frozen hands, even at like minus 15, 20 degrees. They've been fine. Whereas a pair of them, the hands can get cold and go numb at minus 3 or 4.
Interesting.
Because once your hands are wet, it's sapping heat. Your fingers are separate, so they're not warming each other up. Whereas in a mitt, your fingers are all together in there, and you can tuck your thumb in with them as well and everything, and you can keep warm hands. So I was on the Spine Challenger a month or so back, and there were a lot of people with all sorts of fancy, expensive glove options who couldn't use their hands because they got so cold. And I was wearing these. Well, in fact, I was wearing an even lighter weight version, just a Pertex shell, but a mitt. And I never even had slightly numb fingers. There's people getting a bit of hypothermia kicking in, and I was toasty warm.
So, how much roughly would a pair of gloves like that cost?
I've had this pair for about 25 years now, so
inflation might have gone up a bit then.
Yeah, that's it. I don't think you're looking at much more than 25 or 30 quid for something like that.
Yeah,
I honestly couldn't say for certain, but it's going to be that sort of realms, maybe. Maybe cheaper, I'm not sure. I mean, it is only a pair of wool gloves. These are called Dachsteins, which aren't carried that often anymore because they do so much better than the really expensive, fancy synthetic gloves. And you can get a shell to go on the outside of that to keep the extra weather out if you really want to. So I might do that in the depths of winter.
Yeah.
But they do a really good job. So I'd always promote mitts. I'd also always promote practicing doing zips and things with mitts on, because you don't want to be taking them off, and it does get a bit harder.
Yeah, true.
True. That's a thing they recommend for the high altitude mountaineering is practice doing everything with your mitts on. As soon as there's exposed skin, you've got frozen skin in some of those places, and out in the Arctic and those sort of places as well. Hats and hats and buffs as well. For what we want, something like that will be fine. So long as it comes down far enough to cover your ears.
So make sure your hat covers your ears.
Yeah, because I've had frost nip on the tips of my ears before, and it does get a bit sore a couple of days later. Make sure your ears are covered. The hat you get is, again, personal preference. This one, I think, is merino wool. I like merino wool for most layers.
I presume there's a reason for that, and that's because it keeps you warm.
It does. Doesn't matter if it gets wet. It's still going to keep you warm.
What's important at the end of the day, isn't it?
That's
keeping
it.
Warm.
The weather we've had recently, the amount of rain there's been, even really expensive jackets, will come on to a minute. You're still going to get wet on the inside of them, so you need to be warm in them. Warm and wet is better than cold. Cold's your problem. That's what you're trying to avoid. Wet might lead you to a bit of rubbing and chafing type stuff, which you can manage, but cold is dangerous.
Yeah.
So hat that covers your ears. You can stick a buff on as well. A lot of events. Claire will probably like the fact that I'm showing one of hers here. A lot of events will give out free buffs as part of the event. It doesn't have to be anything fancy. It's just keeping a bit of the breeze off your neck, maybe.
Yeah.
And stuff like that you can use as a hat and everything as well. So
basically like a glorified scarf.
Exactly, yeah. And of course they pack down tiny, so I'll probably stick two or three in my pack. Not that I ever personally wear them, but I'll stick two or three in my pack for other people. I end up handing them out rather than wearing them myself, but having them there is handy. So that's always a good little bit of kit to have. So waterproofs, I mentioned waterproofs just then. This one, let's make that. You can get all sorts of grades of coat, but something like this is perfectly suitable.
What makes that one?
This one is Mountain Equipment, which I got from Magic Mountain down near Nottingham. Beeston, I think, rings a bell. It's just outside Nottingham. But Magic Mountain, this is I think this is a sample or something. They get the factory seconds and samples and all those sort of demo models. So they're notably cheaper. So that jacket would normally be over 300 quid, because it's Gore-Tex Pro, which is suitable for the worst of the winter weather. We're not going to need anything to that extent, but this is also not going to make me overheating in the sort of autumn type weather that we're going to have. So this will be my coat that I take on that event. The main things for any jacket, whether it's of this level or thinner, the other Gore-Tex options are all good, but there are other waterproof and breathable layers out there as well. Event is another pretty well established one, been about for years. There's a few of that sort of ilk anyway. Key things for these is to have taped seams.
So right, okay.
They're stronger and basically they don't leak.
Yeah.
So, whole point of a waterproof coat is to keep the water out. So tape seams on the inside there. Other than that, having a hood is helpful. I've never been a huge fan of hoods myself, but a good fitting hood in bad conditions is invaluable. Having a stiffened peak, bit of wire in there, means that the wind's not going to be just flattening it across your face, because it's useful to be able to see where you're going. Adjusters to keep the hood actually fitting to your head fairly snugly, because again, wind goes into your hood and blows it off the back of your head, it's not doing its job.
Yeah.
So making sure stuff like that fits. In terms of fit, it needs to be big enough that you can put your warm layers underneath it. You don't want to be constricted up, walking around stiff.
So would you say getting a size bigger is usually better, or?
I mean, the sizing should be about right, to be fair, to cater for that. But you're not going to try and just go to the cheap rack and squeeze into the medium because you're optimistic and it's a darn sight cheaper. You're better off going for the right size rather than trying to get away with it with stuff like that. Sleeve length is also worth going for. That's one of the main reasons I pick Mountain Equipment over the other brands. Is Mountain Equipment known for having sleeves that are long enough for my massive orangutan arms. So if you haven't got excessive arms, then the other brands are all going to be very good as well. You know, your Rabs and your Mountain Hardware and Berghaus and all those other brands, they're going to be plenty adequate. For our purposes, as I say, we can go for a lighter grade of jacket, but those sort of features, as I say, making sure it fits, taped seams, properly fitting hood. Other features you can have on the jacket, obviously there's pockets and pit zips, so you can undo that if you're a sweater, let the air get in. But obviously we've got waterproof zips on those, which most of the jackets have. It's just about doing your best to keep the water out. But then under it, you're going to have your other layers, your warm layers. You need space for your fleece jacket to keep you properly warm if it's really cold. A merino wool base layer, long sleeve ideally, because you need the coverage. I've actually often found that if I've got a long sleeve top on, and if I've got my forearms warm, tends to be that my hands and the rest of me is fairly warm as well. But I can then push them up and let some of that heat vent a bit. So I've got a quick, easy adjust for me for my temperature control. So having the long sleeves, I would say, even if you run hot like I do, that it's worth having that because being able to warm up your forearms keeps your hands warm as well to an extent, even without the gloves. Merino. Good material for that, and then probably we're going to want to have a spare at least for this particular event, because as we get higher up, you might want a second one on there, and we might want the fleece as well to add to that. 1300 meters is a lot of degrees of temperature drop. Especially with the wind kicking in at height, that might be the sole reason for the jacket, to be honest, is to keep the wind off. Because that can be a big sapper. Trousers as well, waterproof trousers. Doesn't have to be anything like as fancy, because the jacket's keeping your core protected. Your legs are a little bit less important in that respect, I suppose. Obviously, you want your legs working, but they don't tend to have the same danger issues over temperature. So your trousers, you can get away with something a little bit lighter weight, perhaps. Still looking at taped seams to keep them waterproof, and actually making sure they are waterproof as opposed to just showerproof. Your waterproof trousers in a little stuff sack type ones could be adequate for that purpose. Because as long as we're not getting into winter conditions, you shouldn't need big salopettes and all that malarkey.
Cool.
So that's your waterproofs and base layer shells. We'll probably have an element of personal preference when it comes to leg wear, sort of under your waterproofs. So it might be warm enough for shorts, but we'll probably still want to be taking with us a full length trouser as well.
I've seen some that have got zips on. So you can unzip them and they turn into shorts, or you can put the bottom half back on.
They're quite good. And you get a similar idea. You get ones where you can effectively roll the trouser leg up and you've got a little tab that will then hold it up. So ones like that are a good idea. I personally found that the zipped ones, the zip was always somewhere near my knee and was annoying and rubbed a bit. So I could feel that the zip was there. So I don't like them, but they do that job fairly well. The other option is things like running tights. A lot of people will wear a pair of running tights, possibly with the shorts over the top. or just have the running tights in the bag to shove on. If you attend any of the like the ultra races, trail races, they'll probably specify that you at least carry a pair of long tights type leggings for the warmth that you might need. Depending on when it is, some of those races will say you've got to be wearing those from the start, even so, and have a spare pair, because you always want you always want to be carrying slightly more layers than you think you'll need, because if you're stuck and you're not moving anywhere, you'll probably need them.
Yeah, true.
And that's what a lot of people think. They sort of miss the point on it. It's like, oh yeah, I never get cold. I won't need that. It's like, yeah, you don't get cold while you're moving. You stop moving, your temperature's going downhill fast. And mountain rescue, it can be hours before mountain rescue will get anywhere near you, even if you're not that far from civilization, because they've got to have the call out, they've got to put a team together, they've got to head up to you, they'll be coming on foot. So if you've walked an hour in and you're a fast walker, they'll be walking an hour in as well. They've got to know where you are. They need to be walking to the same place you're actually at, which brings me on to the next thing of having a map and a compass, and knowing how to use them. It's all very well carrying a nice waterproof map with you and having all these pretty squiggles on the page, but if you don't know what they mean, that's of no use to you or mountain rescue when you try and tell them where you are. Like, they'll ask you for a grid reference and you'll say, I'm on Explorer 392. Does that help? not much. Knowing how to use that is important, and not just relying on there being somebody in the group who knows how to use it.
Because making sure you personally know how to use it. Yeah, that is a big thing.
Yeah, very much.
I think everybody needs to be able to at least have a basic degree of navigation instruction and stuff. I think you're right.
I mean, I don't want to scare people off of getting out there and doing stuff, but if you're going a lot of the routes in the Lake District in the Peaks, if it's clear weather, then they're really easily marked trails. You can wander around and You can move around with some of the basic tourist maps you can pick up from the tourist information centres might be adequate for a lot of those routes at low level. But if you're further up, getting a bit further away from help, and the weather comes in, as it often does, I mean, just across the hills here, I can watch the cloud come in and just completely cover the hill just over the way, and that's only another 100 metres higher than I am here, those conditions, you could easily lose a narrow path. You could walk straight off the edge of the path and not know you've walked off it. So knowing how to use the map and compass, especially when you can't see far,
that's vital.
I mean, I've been on the hills and you're struggling to see your own hand because of the thickness of the fog. Get in the dark and you're trying to light up stuff with a head torch, and all it's doing is illuminating clouds of fog around you. You still need to be able to navigate. And that's where the mountain leaders come in. We're tested to prove that we can do that. We need to be able to find a particular rock on a blank hillside in those conditions, or we don't pass.
Wow. So
it's as simple as that. It's often the difference between a nice gentle slope off of a hillside and a sheer drop cliff. That can be a couple of degrees from where you are, so long as you know where you are to start with. It can be there or there, and that's the safe bit and that's not, and it can be that specific. So we need to be on the ball with the navigation.
So it's something then that I think we need to get a bit of a team group together and all have a bit of a go at it, I think.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Obviously, we're aiming to head out next weekend. There'll be a bit of a see what everyone knows, and obviously I'll be leading, but we'll have some maps, and I can sort of point out the rudiments of those, across the next, what have we got, 6 months?
Ish. Yeah, just a bit six, over, I think.
Yeah, nearer seven, actually. Across that time, we'll be getting out, and I'll be going into a bit more detail as we go. Obviously, our paths are big, popular, well-defined for the most part, but not the entire distance. There's bits on the side of Scarfell Pike, for instance, where the path isn't as well-defined. Mm-hmm. Even on Snowdon, which looks like a motorway in the daytime, we'll be on that at night, and the path gets a little bit indistinct at a couple of places high up.
Yeah.
Still fairly easy to navigate. You're either on the path or you're off down the steep bank. That steep banks are a clue. Yeah. but even so, people have died on there because they've fallen off the edge. So yeah, it doesn't take much. Yeah, mistakes happen.
Of course they do. Yeah. Of course they do.
Yeah. We're going up next to the railway, so hopefully there won't be any mistakes for our lot.
Touch wood.
But even so, I mean, everyone wants to know how to use one of these. So we'll make sure that's covered. Darkness. We will all need head torches. Something to take with you. Even if you're heading out mid-morning and you're planning on being back mid-afternoon, still have a head torch in your bag. Because if you find yourself struggling, hurt your ankle, can't move on, chances are you'll be out there when it's dark and you're going to want something to be able to see by. It doesn't have to be big and expensive and do everything like this one. Mm-hmm. I mean, this one is powerful enough that I could actually illuminate the hillside at the other side of the valley with it.
Wow.
Don't need it. That's totally unnecessary. If you're walking along, you don't need to know what the other side of the valley looks like.
Mm.
Yeah, that's way overkill. I've got that for trail running, effectively, where I need more light, but I want to be able to see what's further ahead.
Yeah.
But for the most part, that one is turned down. So I'm not using that power most of the time, because it kills the battery as well. You've got something that powerful, and the battery on this will last me 4 to 5 hours. So that's not even a whole night in one torch. So I also carry a smaller one. As long as it's got about 100 lumens, so like the measure of brightness on the torch, effectively, mm-hmm. 100 lumens will give you a nice little circle in front of you so you can see what you're putting your feet down on. Then that'll be plenty. This little one goes up to about 350 lumens, but has like several brightness settings on it. So yeah. If I'm using it, I'll almost always just set it down to the lower setting and done. Because that will be enough for most trail usage. And the battery on that will last 100 hours at that sort of level.
Wow. So you've got that for a fair while then, haven't you?
Yeah, and that will be less than 20 quid. That other one, 80 or 90 or something for all that power. But it's for set purposes. You don't need to be spending that sort of money on a torch. This is Petzl, sort of the main brand for torches. I tend to always go for Petzl because I know they always work, but there's plenty of other brands out there that are probably just as good. Black Diamond do some good ones, for instance. Even your little cheap Gilert ones, they'll do a good enough job, and they'll set you back like 3-4 quid for a torch.
Yeah.
You just might want two just in case it breaks. I'm always a bit dubious about paying virtually nothing for a bit of kit. Yeah, I'd want to back up there.
Yeah, true.
But
true.
But yeah, I mean, less than 20 quid that one was. So and that's more than adequate, and I'll use that for most trails unless it's getting super technical. And if it does get technical, I can just turn up the brightness on it.
Yeah.
So plenty adequate and easy shove in your pocket. Just make sure you've got adequate battery power, spares with you, that sort of thing.
Happy days.
Yeah, and then we're all set with the torches. Other than that, a few things that you that you should take in the hills with you. You need to make sure you've got first aid kit. Can be just basic personal use one, a few blister patches, a little bandage. Yeah, and ideally know how to use it. This is the sort of thing, as a leader, I'd be taking a group-sized kit with me. But also, as a leader, I don't want to be using my stuff all the time. So
people to have their own first aid stuff.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, even if it's me that uses it for them, that's fine. But or someone else in the team. I mean, for our, I think, I mean, you know, you're wearing a first aid kit, I know, so and I know a few of the others do, so we'll have people on the team. I know we've got Alison, who'll be there waiting with her ambulance at the bottom. We've got all the medical side covered, we'll probably do a quick basics to make sure everyone's up to at least a minimum level on that front. So it's always worth having first aid knowledge anyway.
Yeah.
Even if you never step outside of an office, it's always worth having a bit of first aid knowledge.
Oh, of course it is.
Yeah.
Of course it is.
Yeah.
The thing is, you never know, do you? You never know when it'll come in handy.
Yeah, paper cuts hurt. That's I think you've got a better chance of having heart attacks in an office than you have on the hill.
I can believe that.
Yeah.
I
don't know if there's stats behind that or anything, or whether I'm making it up, but an office is a good environment for stress and heart attacks in my mind. first aid kits worth having. Having appropriate food and water for what you're doing.
Yeah.
So if you know that you need a certain amount of food to do something, take a little bit more than that. So you've got some emergency food on board as well.
Mm-hmm.
The typical emergency food, a thing called Kendall mint cake, which is basically fat and sugar. And my opinion of that has always been, there's a reason it's emergency food and it's ideal as emergency food, because it tastes so vile, you're not going to want to eat it unless it's an emergency. So it's always there in your pack.
Yeah.
But I mean, you get like energy bars and things like that you can shove in. Mars bar, it's energy.
Yeah.
Whatever, it doesn't have to be fancy, just taking enough food for you.
Yeah.
And
I know when we were at Territorial Army, it was Haribo.
Yeah,
Haribo was a big one because it's an instant sugar boost.
Yeah, jelly babies are popular.
Yeah, that's right.
A lot of the aid stations on the trail races, it's jelly babies and Jaffa cakes in big tubs. Sometimes tubs sharing the space with snow and ice and things like that, but it doesn't matter. Peanuts. That sort of thing, as long as you're not allergic to them, they're good because the salts. People often need the salts back. It's taking stuff that you're gonna be okay to eat out on the hill. I know I can go the day without eating. I often don't have breakfast until after I've been out on the hill. 9 o'clock at night, and that's my first meal. But that's me. I know I can go those sort of times without.
Mm.
But even so, I'd still have 4 or 5. Energy bars or something in my pack, muesli bars, that sort of thing. I'll still have 4 or 5 of them in my pack for that emergency use. I might be the leader, but leaders can still break a leg.
Of course,
And I've heard of leaders doing that, and their group having to get them down under the leader's direction, but it's still the leader's the one that's injured, and it happens. I'll always carry the emergency food as well. I'll always have like a little bit extra for group members with me too, but it's always worth carrying. Water, again, personal preference on quantity, but I'd always say carry for our trip at least a litre per person, but you'll get to know how much you personally drink. Again, for myself, if it's not hot, then I'll drink almost nothing, and I'll be fine with that for, a one-off hill. But I'll still carry a litre.
Yeah.
That'll still be in the bag. Whether I get it out of the bag or not, it's still going to be there.
Yeah, like you said, though, you never know.
Yeah, exactly. So. And a method of having a hot drink is always useful. If you're stuck and injured or whatever, or someone in your group's injured and everyone has to stop, then you're going to get cold. So a warm drink, small flask of hot chocolate or tea or coffee, whatever you prefer. That'll be useful. Often leaders will carry a flask, but they'll also often carry something like a little jet boil stove.
I want to say we used to have the little hexi stoves, if you've seen them. With the hexi block. They were great for boiling water.
Yeah.
Which that way a mess tin.
Yeah, that's it. And that's standard fare for like a leader's rucksack will have stuff like that in it.
Mm.
Either a flask or a stove and an adequate water to use it on. But yeah, some way of getting a hot drink into people. That'll always be there. Those are the sort of things that would be typically taken by individuals, but leaders would tend to take a bit more stuff. You know, leaders might have a little length of rope in there and slings and other bits and pieces. Shelters, you know, the leader would take. You can get like little bothy bags. They're a good buy actually for personal use. Get one that will like take two or four people, and you just quickly pull a cover over your head. Even if you just stop in for lunch and it's a bit manky weather, pull that over your head, and everyone's warm and protected from the wind. I'll take one that's going to get the whole group in it in one go. It's a bit chunkier, but yeah.
At least it's there, though, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
I think it's there, so.
Yeah, exactly. And then obviously, with all of this stuff you're going to be carrying, you're going to need a bag to put it in. So, a little day pack. Depending on the size of your stuff, obviously, my jacket and trousers are going to be bigger than your jacket and trousers. So, yeah. I might need for my stuff a 35-litre pack, and you might need a 25-litre. So, just get one that's, you're not trying to cram it all in and forcing the zip or anything like that. Just something that's going to take your stuff and carry it comfortably. But again, there's loads of options of those. You can get them for, saw some in a store, I think they were literally £3, reduced down to £3.
No way.
Yeah, so you can pay virtually nothing for something that will take what you need, or you can pay 100.
Ones I've seen that are like 25 litre rucksacks, they've usually been anything between 30 and 50.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't necessarily trust the zips to stay in one piece long enough on a £3 rucksack.
Yeah.
But you can get them on the cheap. And there's always another bit of kit that you can add to your list, and then another bit, and then another bit. You can get little dry bags to keep things completely dry and clear.
Mm.
Something to tuck your phone into if it's not waterproof anyway.
Yeah.
Probably worth noting actually is these fancy smartphones that require you to use the screen to operate them, even to make emergency calls and things like that. If your fingers are wet and the screen's wet, that screen's going to be no use to you whatsoever. So that phone there is of no value whatsoever to me on the hill in bad weather. Can't use it.
So what you're saying, a good old classic Nokia 3210?
Exactly. Perfect.
Yeah.
Battery lasts for days and days and days. And you can use it whatever the weather. So, if you're going to need to make an emergency call, you're going to need to make an emergency call. And you're not going to be wanting to faff around trying to get a smartphone working.
Yeah.
I've even had that thing in a slightly damp pocket from a bit of sweat in the summer. It's repeatedly triggered the screen. I don't know if you notice there, when I tuck it in my pocket, screen's out away from my leg, so I've had my leg triggering the screen, and it's ended up locking me out from repeated login
no
attempts.
Emergency calls in on that then?
No, not just locked me out, full factory reset.
No way.
Yeah. I managed to reinstall it all while I was on the hill, because there was a data connection on the hill I was on. But
that were lucky.
Yeah, but it was still a completely useless phone for best part of an hour.
That's unreal. I didn't even think of that.
I found it quite annoying recently. So
I can imagine.
A little 3210 that goes in the pack, and that'll pretty much always work.
Happy days.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. So I mean, that's bare bones. As I say, there's so many bits and pieces of kit out there that you can add to it, but those are.
But at least that's the basics of what you'd need. So at least if you had all that stuff, you'd be able to complete a hill walk.
Yeah, totally. And that'll be suitable for heading up over Kinder or Bleaklow in the peak here, or a lot of the smaller hills in the lakes under nice-ish conditions. But you'll gradually do bigger and better things as you get more experience. You get used to what you can physically do, and you get more and more used to the navigation. The more navigation you do, the better you get at it.
Very true.
Physiological adaptations to that. There are parts of your brain which will physically get bigger the more you navigate.
Wow.
It's been measured. So yeah, so the more you do, the better your brain is at doing it.
Lovely stuff.
Yeah.
Well, that's been interesting, that, Martin.
Cool.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much.
No worries.
Right. So we'll. I hope people have actually learnt a little bit from that, because I know I have. There's much more. At least now I feel a little bit more confident going out and looking at different pieces of kit that we're going to need.
Yep.
And being able to find various pieces and stuff for the team.
Yeah, good stuff.
Awesome. Thank you very much.
No worries.
Nice one.